Hello and welcome to your weekly 60 minutes of great tracks and sidetracks with me, Peter Fleming. And you're listening to Coast Access Radio, 104.7, as if you didn't know. And we've got the usual sort of programme of bits and pieces from the International Express, trying to keep you up to date with the odd things that are going on in the UK, and interspersed with some super duper music from the 60s, 70s, 80s, all the good stuff that just never seems to date and which we always love listening to. And just to prove that we are all alive, it's the Bee Gees with Staying Alive.
Time.
at this stage of the program, I usually like to sort of tell you a little bit about anything we've discovered over the past week on the entertainment scene. And this can be just to let you know if you've been to the cinema and what we thought of whatever we went to see. And we haven't been to this, me and my wife haven't been this week. But what's on the telly? Well, I think the only thing that stands out to us is we started watching last night. There's a series on TVNZ called The Guest. I think it's set in Wales, and it's a bit of a mystery, a bit of a strange programme. There's only four parts to it, and we watched two last night, and we'll watch the remaining two probably tonight. Quite good, actually. I was getting a bit gripped in it. It's one of these convoluted mystery things that suspicious people and innocent people, I find it quite entertaining, so you might be interested to have a quick butchers at that if you haven't already. That's The Guest, and it's on TVNZ On Demand. And I'm now demanding Bon Jovi. We'll be right back. And another regular feature I like to think on the programme is my shout out for the Kapiti Food Bank based in Paraparam. My wife helps out there on a Wednesday and she photographs the list of shortages and sends them to me. So here we are. If you want to donate to the Kapiti Food Bank, you can buy stuff on your way through the supermarket and put a few extra things in your trolley, and then in Pack and Save and New World, you can then, there's boxes beyond the checkout counter where you can put your donations, your donated food. And what they're looking for, so they're very low on stock of pasta sauce, cooking oil, Milo and hot chocolate, milk powder, UHT milk, 2-minute noodles, cereals of any sort, jam, honey, Vegemite, or Marmite, take a pick there, and various little desserts for people. Low on stock also on sugar and oats, muesli bars, gluten-free items. And then on the other side, the sort of stuff for the kitchen and bathroom, toothbrushes and toothpaste, hand wash, laundry powder, laundry liquid, body wash, toilet paper, conditioner, shampoo, dishwasher liquid, and panty liners. So there we are. That's the sort of it's typical. It's virtually every week I seem to read a very similar list, but there's a lot of stuff shortages there. So if you can find a few dollars, and I always say, I mean, if you've got $10 when you're going through the supermarket, if you start picking up things like pasta and sauces and that, you get quite a bit for it. Maybe not quite so much on the toothpaste side, but every little helps, doesn't it? Every little, if we all did our bit. So there we are. That's the Kapiti Food Bank. Help it out if you can. That is just the most beautiful track, isn't it? I think it's fabulous. Right, and so to the International Express. Now, I came across this article. This is in a fairly recent newspaper, but despite the fact that it's quite a while now since the beginning of the new year. In fact, we're into the second month, aren't we? But let me take you back to the 31st of December and the New Year's Eve. And have you heard of First Footing? Now, this is I'll read this. There's an article about it here. Somebody wrote with a question about it, and they said, first, I'm 90 now, but at the age of 13, I was tasked with carrying coal from the back door to the front on New Year's Eve. As the clock struck midnight, I was let in and had to throw the coal on the fire. Then everyone shook my hand and I was covered in kisses. When I asked my mother why this was, she told me it was because I had black hair. Can you explain this? Well, first footing is an old tradition of welcoming the new year, and it is deeply rooted in history and superstition. It offers good luck and health to the home, possibly dating to the Viking raids on Scotland and northern England in the 8th century. First footing revolves around the arrival of the first person, the first foot, to enter a home after midnight on New Year's Eve, marking the start of the new year. That person was welcomed in after midnight and offered food and drink. It is believed the first person to enter a house on January the 1st will bring good or bad luck, and the luckiest first footer of all is traditionally seen as a tall, dark-haired male, a protector against any ill fate. In contrast to the folklore of a fair-haired stranger, a Viking, arriving at one's door, which signified trouble. Significantly, it is also considered bad luck if the first footer arrives empty-handed, so symbolic gifts such as a silver coin, shortbread or black bun, salt, coal and a drink, usually whiskey, are brought to represent prosperity, food, flavour, warmth and good cheer. It is also considered unlucky for anyone to leave the house before the first footer arrives. The act of stepping out even briefly before the first footer crosses the threshold is believed to bring misfortune. Despite some modern adaptations, the essence of first footing to bring luck and ensure good luck in the coming year remains a cherished practice. Now, I read you that because it's something that my father, coming from the north of England, he always used to first foot. He'd be up till midnight and he would have first, but he wasn't dark haired, but I mean, you have to, but it was always a lump of coal in those days, so he could bring a bit of coal. And I've done it ever since. Approaching the end of my life, and I've been for donkey's years. Every guy, I insist, and whether I've been overseas or wherever, at 12 o'clock, I will go outside and hang about and then ring the doorbell, come back in. My wife sort of raises her eyebrows and sighs as if to put up with it. And I must admit, that's the odd bit about it is that all the years I've been doing it, all the years I go out and outside the front door and stand in the street, I've never seen anybody else standing outside, stamping about in the feet. Well, in the cold in the UK, there's only ever me. But that's first footing. I'm going to cut that out and I'm going to bear that in mind for next year. And I'll read it to you at the end of December last year to remind you what first footing is all about. Bit lengthy there. Here we are, Simon and Garfunkel.
Just a poor boy, though my story is seldom told. I have squandered my resistance for a pocket full of mumbles, such are promises. All lies and jest, still the man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest. When I left my home and my family, I was no more than a boy in the company of strangers, in the quiet of the railway station, wet and scared. Laying low, seeking out the poor quarters where the ragged people go, looking for the places only they would know. Bye-la-lai. Asking only workmen's wages, I come looking for a job, but I get no offers. Just to come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la. La 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 la
wishing I was gone, going home, where the New York City winters are bleeding me, bleeding me. Stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame, I am leaving, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains. Lila, 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 lila.
If you're a numismatist and a collector of coins, then you might be interested to know, but probably if you are, you know this already, but there are to be five new anniversary coins unveiled by the Royal Mint to mark 2026. In fact, they have been unveiled. There are two 50p coins to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Grand Prix in Britain and 50 years of the King's Trust. Then there are two £2 coins marking 200 years of the Zoological Society of London and the 200th anniversary of Charles Darwin's HMS Beagle. And finally, the fifth coin, a £5 coin, celebrates the 100 years since the birth of Queen Elizabeth II. They're all available now. And in a first for the Mint, 52 gold commemorative versions of the collection have been produced using recycled gold from old jewellery and coins. The Mint said it was aiming to produce all gold commemorative coins from recycled gold by the end of the year. Coins have a unique ability to mark themes that resonate across different communities and interests. Yeah, sound quite good, don't they? If you can afford to buy them. What about the solid gold ones? Wow. Right, back to music. Chasing Cars, Snow Patrol. I like this. Oh, I like it. It's about everything, don't I? Oh, I like this one. Well, I like this one as well.
We'll do it all, everything on our own. We don't need anything or anything. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? don't quite know how to say how I feel. Those three words I said too much. They're not. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Forget what we're told before we get too old. Show me. Waste time chasing cars around our heads. If I lay here, if I just lay here, would you lie with me and just forget the world? Just lay here. Would you lie with me and just forget the world?
A super track there from Snow Patrol. Now, I remember reading about this case back in November when it was Remembrance Day and things in the UK, about some chap who was dressed up as a fake admiral. He's not an admiral, and he dressed himself up and he was attending Remembrance Day parades. Well, it's back in the news because there's finally been a court case over it. Fake admiral is fined for wearing uniform. An ex-history teacher who dressed as an admiral at a remembrance event has been fined £500. Imposter Jonathan Carley, 65, joined dignitaries laying wreaths and saluting at the ceremony in Llandudno last November. But service personnel and veterans had become suspicious of his rare Distinguished Service Order medal and the ceremonial sword he carried at previous events he attended in the area since 2018. When he was arrested 5 days after last year's Remembrance Sunday event, he told the police, "Well, I'd been expecting you." He told police that the uniform was issued to him when he was in the cadets, but he had rear admiral rings added by a tailor and bought medals online. In court, he admitted wearing uniform without permission. District judge fined him £500 and ordered him to pay £85 towards prosecution costs and a £200 surcharge. What a strange thing to happen. I'd never heard of anything quite like that before. Totally harmless, but yes, you can imagine it obviously upset a few ex-service people.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here? same as it ever was, 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 same as it ever was.
You might be aware that I love coming across articles with staggering facts and figures that you really find it hard to believe. And how about this one? Oasis Wonder Haul of £8 million. Oasis were easily the top earning British band last year, banking an average £8 million per gig. Reunited brothers Noel and Liam Gallagher pulled in £69,731 a minute. Or £8,365,565 for each arena date in their world tour. Each arena date. The Manchester icons towered above other Brit acts with the Wonderwall hitmakers more than 30% ahead of Coldplay. And Coldplay were making just under £6 million a night. Robbie Williams was third to the tune of £3.5 million for each set he played. And then coming in right at the back, Ed Sheeran, who made a measly £3.1 million for each time he played a set or played a gig on his tour or anything. You can't believe it, can't you? £8 million. I mean, I know people, you're spending a huge amount of money to get a ticket for these things, but even then to raise £8 million. Anyway, it doesn't sort of go into that sort of thing, of the average ticket cost and that for the poor old punters. Wow, that's a lot of money. And you sort of get kids who say, what do you want to do when you grow up? Oh, I want to be a pop star. Yeah, I'm not surprised. All right, being pop stars, this is probably what the Hollies decided to do at one time, and here they are. Cluedo. Now, who hasn't played Cluedo at some time in their life? It's one of the most popular, surely, Christmas games for families to play Cluedo. I've been playing it for donkey's years, really. Now, it's a super article here about the history of it. Mystery of Cluedo, D-O-U-G-H, right. The game's creator sold the rights for £5,000. Can you believe it? Right. If you said that Cluedo's invention was committed by a pianist in a Birmingham kitchen with time on his hands, you would be right. The real puzzle is why Anthony Pratt did not make a killing by creating what would become the world's second best-selling board game after Monopoly. Anthony devised the whodunit game during the Second World War to make some money. He would go on to sell the foreign rights for £5,000 and missed out on a fortune. His daughter, who is now 72, has just given one of his the first versions of the game, letters and memorabilia, to Birmingham Museum and Art Gallery, where they will go on show. Cluedo was originally called Murder! Exclamation mark. I was inspired by Anthony's job performing in grand country hotels as a pianist and stately homes. Marcia's mum, Elva, designed the board, which, apart from the addition of secret passages, has remained little changed. The original game had 10 characters and 9 murder weapons when it was provisionally patented in 1944. Alongside Professor Plum, Reverend Green and Miss Scarlet, there were Mr. Brown, Mr. Gold, Miss Green and Miss Silver, and their choice of deadly weapons to commit murder included an axe, a cudgel, a bomb, a syringe of poison and a poker. More than 150 million copies of Cluedo have been sold globally, and they spawned dozens of editions. Yeah, fabulous, isn't it? What a lovely Anthony. He later on made parts for tanks in the war after work as a pianist dried up, and inventing a board game was a side project. Fantastic. Well, you've certainly brought a lot of entertainment and joy and fun and frustration to a lot of people since. Great game, Cluedo. We still love playing it. And that board then, that's the original design, it's just so atmospheric somehow. If you turn the lights down a little bit low and you get round there, you could be there in that old house with a dead body at the bottom of the stairs or wherever it was. Super duper.
Take away the
Well, continuing on the theme of board games, have you come across the game called Squatter? Now, that little article I referred to just now referred to Monopoly, which, of course, is the board game based on buying, selling, renting property in London. Now, as an Australian version came out many, many, many years ago, because my wife turned up with it when we got married, and it was part of her sort of dowry. No, it belonged to her. It wasn't given to her by her father. Anyway, and it's called Squatter, and it's the identical sort of idea to Monopoly, but it's all based on a farming year in Australia on a sheep farm. And the idea is you all start off with a number of pens of sheep, and you throw your dice and you go around the board and you encounter various problems. There are certain squares where there's a tucker bag, and there are cards you pick up on there, and that can be anything from an enormous income tax bill you've got to pay, or you might have won an award at a show. There are other squares you land on where you're penalised because your sheep need jetting for fly strike. Your fences might need repairing, and all sorts of things. But also, as you go around, there are about 9 or 10, I think, squares where if you land on them, you can do a stock sale and you can buy or sell your sheep. So the idea being, everybody's given a fistful of money at the beginning of the game, just like Monopoly. And if you land on one of these somewhere near the beginning of the farming year, then the idea is you sell your sheep. So then the chances are of pricing are on another pile of cards, which you pick up, and there it tells you what the price is if you're selling them, and what the prices are if you're private selling or buying. And this can vary considerably, but you sell them at a high price, and further around the board, when you, all being well, you land on another stock sale square, you can then buy lots more sheep with that money for a cheaper price. That's the theory. Doesn't always work that way. Anybody knows about farming, of course it doesn't work that way. But it's a great game. Super game is Squatter. And it's a very Australian, but it's not easy to find these days. But if you do find it, I can heartily recommend it.
Wondering what clothes to wear. sweeter bear. And then I tell her, as I turn out the light, I say, my darling, you are wonderful tonight. Oh, my darling, you are wonderful tonight. And
Eric Clapton brings us nicely to the end of another edition of Great Tracks and Sidetracks. Hope you've enjoyed it. I was enjoying it. There's interesting bits and pieces there. I thought the bit about Cluedo was particularly fascinating because, I think we've all played it, haven't we, at some time or another? Well, that's it. Until next week, and see what else I can find to entertain you with next week. In the meantime, look after yourselves. Enjoy the sun, which we finally seem to have got. And I'll be back with you as usual. Bye for now.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the Access Media website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.